Hello and welcome to this edition of Conversations from the ANF Network. In this episode, I speak to foster carers Halima and Adam. They have chosen to be carers while raising a young family and describe their positive experiences as well as some of the challenges that they have faced. It's a thoughtful conversation and demonstrates how effective support is essential for all foster carers. As always, if you've experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective, personal or professional, and would like to share that on the podcast, please do get in touch through the Facebook page, the app formerly known as Twitter, or you can email us at anfpodcast@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Halima. I'm foster carer with Nexus in Birmingham. We've been fostering for about 5 years now.
My name's Adam. So I guess we're a married couple. We've been married for 13 years now. We were married quite young, I think. Well, generally, people tend to marry much later than we married. I guess we were very keen to have a family and to have children and to look after children and raise children. And so fostering was one of the ways that we thought about doing that and was interested in pursuing from the beginning of our marriage, really.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we waited a while and we looked into it early on and then reviewed it a few years later. And then, then went through the training process, didn't we?
Ask a few questions then, because it does feel, it's slightly unusual, isn't it? I mean, I guess we have this stereotype of foster carers, or there is a stereotype. This maybe it's people that maybe the different end of their lives that they've had children that they come to it when their children are older. So what was it that made you want to do it this way around? Was it just the way it was?
I think it was just something that we knew we wanted to do and felt we could do it. And obviously there's such a huge need for it. It wasn't something either or. It was something we wanted to do alongside having our birth children. Our son's 9 now. So we did end up having a birth child first and then went through the process. But I think that's something really important to us, is having our children exposed to looking after other children and, you know, extending the family that way, and understanding there is such a huge need for it.
Yeah. As well, it's a little unusual for people with quite young children. So I guess your child was 4, 5?
Yeah, it was 4 or 5 when we took our first placement. And then we have a child who's 2 as well now.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot going on. Busy house. So what was the response of foster care agencies? I mean, did you just literally go through the Yellow Pages or the internet and sort of pick a foster care agency? Did you know anything about fostering?
We did a lot of research. We looked into it, like I said earlier on, and then we ended up having our birth child. But then, yeah, Adam especially was doing a lot of research. We knew somebody with Nexus at the time. It was kind of through...
Even prior to that, we knew someone. I had a friend who was fostering, and he was with an agency. And so I guess it was something we knew that we were interested in doing. We didn't know anything about it, but we were able to talk to some people that we knew were fostering, and they were very quick to kind of say, you should go with an agency, don't go straight with a local authority. And so we didn't have that experience of going into fostering, working with a local authority. I think a lot of people probably do go in that way, and then they move into agencies over time. We feel quite fortunate that we didn't do that, because I think it becomes apparent quite quickly that the local authorities really struggle, and it's harder work for the carers. You get less support, they're more stretched. I had an aunt as well who fostered with the local authority. She had a very positive placement, but we could kind of see, we had some sense of the challenges. So I guess we were quite fortunate in being directed towards a fostering agency from the beginning, and that gave us a framework to read into it. There's lots of really good websites, lots of incredible agencies. We spent, you know, maybe like 3 to 6 months just reading up, looking at websites, reading referrals in terms of, you know, people's views about those agencies. And we approached it from that way, from really thinking about who we wanted to be working with, which company we wanted to be connected to. And as Salima said, we did approach an agency prior to having our own son, and we began that process, and it was really positive. We ended up deciding not to pursue it at that point because we weren't quite in the right place to take it on. But it made us feel more confident about that process of approaching an agency, working with an agency, going through the training and the assessments, I guess, with them. And yeah, it was a really positive experience. I think we both enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I mean, some people describe it, can be quite surprised by the sort of the nature of the assessment and the length of the assessment, the depth of the assessment. Was that, I mean, you sound like you were quite familiar, but still, was it, how did you find that in terms of like looking under every stone?
Yeah, I think we were quite apprehensive actually going into it, but actually it was amazing. When do you ever, you spent about, I can't remember exactly, maybe 4, 5, 6 months really delving into everything, thinking back to all your childhood memories, experiences, and you document it all. You have to share everything, but actually it was really amazing experience to think about all of that and try and maybe process things you hadn't processed at the time or share things you've never said out loud. And yeah, just to really go through it and have, but somebody's with you, like you speak about these experiences and kind of process it together. And that's just that part of it. Obviously there's continual training through that time, which is also like really full on, but really fascinating and interesting. Like you're learning so much in that first 6, 12 months. Yeah, I think we both found it quite an experience, didn't we? Documenting everything.
I think we both found it very therapeutic as a process. And I think parenting can, in some ways, be therapeutic. We all grow up and we go through the trauma of growing into an adult in the craziness of what the world is, plus the craziness of what our body is going through and doing to us. And I think even the people who've had some of the best lives will still have a level of trauma within that process. And this was a very reflective process for us, this training and this assessment and gaining approval. And it's what we're interested in anyway as parents, this idea of understanding, recognizing the process of becoming an adult, the trauma that one carries with themselves through childhood and through adolescence into a young adult. And so the process kind of helped us to see that within ourselves and to understand it within ourselves. And that in a way becomes, you kind of become useful at and ready for helping other people to go through that process when you fully understand it yourselves. So yeah, I found it incredibly therapeutic to go through that almost reflective process, which I understand a lot of people feel it's invasive, feel that it's uncomfortable. But I think we really embraced it and we enjoyed the idea of looking at ourselves, reviewing ourselves as parents, thinking about the best types of parents that we could be, and having a team of people around us that led us, encouraged us, supported us. And so it felt like we became parents with a team of people rather than as just an individual couple. And it really instilled in us the desire for therapeutic care and therapeutic understanding, particularly within adolescence, I think. And you know, I've had to relearn who I am through building a relationship with my children. We've had to relearn who we are as a couple through building our relationship with our children. And it's so dynamic, it's so interesting and it's exciting and beautiful. And the fostering felt like a framework for us to do that in a very kind of, not completely safe, but a much safer place than doing it independently. So we fully embraced that whole process and we enjoyed it and we felt like we grew through it.
I'm conscious at the same time you're parenting young children or young child at the time. So did it sort of impact on your parenting even at that stage?
I think so, definitely. Like we were having training very early on. And so our son would have been about 4 at the time. And obviously you're learning like training on development from birth through to teenagehood, adulthood, and the different stages and what they're going through, and definitely helped us deal with those kind of challenges that a young child brings. And like, yes, understand what they're going through definitely then helps you and how you respond to that and cope with it maybe.
And I guess as well, if I mean, I think I said to you before we pressed record, is I have been a supervising social worker. I still undertake form F assessments, which is kind of it's sort of known as mostly. And I was thinking, well, if you came to me, what would be my questions? I was thinking, well, with a 4-year-old, my question is, well, what's going to be the impact on a 4-year-old? And what did you have concerns about the impact of, you know, the experience of fostering, the change in lifestyle, but also bringing potentially another child with unique sort of experiences into the household?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's only natural to have those concerns and thoughts. And I think it's healthy too. I think you can't not think about those things. And obviously that will then reflect the kind of situation, or like who you can take on. You obviously have to think a bit wider about their experiences and who you're bringing into the house. But we just knew that was what we wanted our children to grow up with, other children as well. I think that just because that was important to us, yes, we were careful to think about the process and helping him kind of be a part of the process as well. You do think about those things, yeah.
So you then, what were you actually approved for? Because people may not be familiar, but when you're registered, you get sort of an age range, sex, in terms of the needs of a child. What were you approved for?
Everything, I think, apart from my wear. Yeah, because we were talking about all sorts of, I think we were even mentioning mother and child placements at one point, and unaccompanied minors. You know, we were discussing all areas that I, like Nexus, were supporting. Yes, we were approved for any age.
That's interesting, because there's a lot of options there, isn't there? So what?
Yeah, but because with your own agency, you're unlikely to get a baby, for example, because of their, you know, they don't necessarily come through the agencies.
Right.
For a younger child. But well, we knew...
That was one of our challenges in at the beginning, though, was knowing moving away from a fixed vision of what you have. Mm. So we weren't entirely sure. You know, we knew we wanted to do this. We were excited about having a new young person in our house and you know, being part of our household, being part of our family. It was important that our son would have a positive relationship with somebody who was not a birth family member, who he would get an experience of something completely different from the normal kind of day-to-day that he knew. But we were nervous about certain things. We were nervous about teenagers, for example, because we had a 4-year-old, we were much more comfortable with younger children. We weren't really sure about the process in relation to younger children. There was a lot of stuff to do with gender that I think we hadn't considered and thought about. For example, the nature of a young girl being in our house and me being the primary carer, which is kind of how we were looking to start. So there were too many options and too many unknowns at that point, and we were a little bit overwhelmed with that. We just knew we wanted to do something positive. Mm. And it was with the agency and our supervising social worker, they were kind of effectively able to coach us into being open to certain types of placements that are more prevalent, being, you know, open to, or being braver in terms of being open to opportunities that we perhaps wouldn't have looked at naturally. And so we did actually end up taking on a placement with a teenager. He was 12, just going 13,
yeah, exactly.
when he moved in, which initially we wouldn't have thought of at all. But we were kind of coached through feeling comfortable with that. We did do some respite placements in the build up to it, and we kind of, you know, we don't rush into making decisions. We like to think and plan and have some control over how we're moving forward, so that we could be in the best kind of place and position that we can be to offer help. But I think we were very tentative, probably overly cautious, and that meant that we got a lot of really helpful encouragement, and you know, we ended up with some amazing experiences and some amazing respite placements, and then a full placement.
Prior to being approved, it can often feel really abstract, can't it? It's all hypotheticals. Yeah. How would you support a child like this, like that?
Mm.
And it feels, and I'm sort of working in the field, it feels the minute you sort of present a child, then it all becomes much more doable. If you know what I mean, it becomes like, oh, well, yeah, that's a human. But before then, it's just an idea. So I presume you were approved. You're relieved to be approved. And so tell me, what was it like having sort of thought, you know, as you say, you did respite, but then that moment when you're given charge of a young person, what was that like?
Well, obviously we'd had about a year of doing the respite. So we were kind of eagerly waiting for it, weren't we, really? And so by this point, I gave up. I was working part-time, so I stopped that because it was just limiting the opportunities we were having with having a full-time, not doing respite anymore. So I gave up work just to be able to be a bit more flexible with taking on somebody to come live with us. So I think it was literally about 2 months after finishing my job, about 2 months later, we had somebody move in, and he's still here now.
Excellent.
So, but I mean, it is a process having the referrals sent through. Like, we did find that really difficult, mainly just because you're reading really difficult situations and what they've been through. But I mean, you can put yourself forward as well. It doesn't mean that then you're getting that young person. There's obviously, they reach out to quite a few people at the same time. It's a difficult process, but obviously you're supported throughout the whole time, and you feel held. It's not just like us doing it by ourselves.
So I guess it's maybe worth reflecting the difference between the local authorities. There's a higher volume of children coming through that you're asked to look after, whereas in an independent foster care agency, like a small agency like you're with, or a smaller agency, the agency doesn't have to take children. The local authority does.
Yeah.
And so that there's a different emphasis there, isn't there, in terms of getting a good fit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can talk that through as well.
But also the agencies tend to have to work with children that the local authorities struggle to place. And so they can be more complex placements. They can be, you know, young people that have much more needs or difficulties, some, you know, illnesses, disabilities, and we read through lots of referrals like that, where it was really difficult to make a choice, to make a decision. You kind of feel like, we want to help everybody, but you have to be, you know, you have to be reflective, and you have to think, well, is this really a good fit for us? Can we help this person the best? Or is this going to be too much and actually become something that is not long-term and so actually more traumatic for the child in terms of coming in and then having to potentially leave if we're not capable?
I think we were very worried about that, weren't we? We didn't want to let anyone down.
Yeah.
Especially being our first placement, like, there was a lot of anxiety around that. But yes, but you know, we have the social workers, you have the team, like, you just felt, once you take the step, you just realize actually it all just kind of falls into place.
I mean, it's a peculiar experience, isn't it, that in terms of all of this anticipation and preparation, but there comes a moment where the social worker shuts the door behind them and leaves, and you're left in charge of this little person. And how did you find that sort of that shift into being carers?
We were ready.
Yeah, I think we'd had that build up.
We'd had like a year of training without placement. We'd had the taster of respite. And our home felt empty, I think. You know, there were three of us at the time with our son who was four. But we were in a three-bedroom house and the house felt too big for us. And so we were ready for that extra person. And I think that, you know, there was a lot of anxiety in a positive way, you know, like a nervousness, like butterflies or something. But it was a kind of positive nervousness that we were just ready to start and to build this relationship with this young man. I think not rushing into it, not feeling pressured into making any decisions, having the support from the agency put us into, you know, a strong, confident place. And I think that's what's great about working with agencies is they can kind of coach you and support you into being a good, kind of positive, strong carer. I don't think we've ever really, I mean, there's been touch and go moments only briefly, but I don't think we've ever felt like we've been left in the lurch or mm-mm. we've been dropped and we have to cope with an issue on our own with no idea of what to do. And it's been baby steps towards what we wanted, but we were able to work through that process and get there. So yeah, I think we were ready for that moment. And then when it happened, I think we were mostly excited. There was, as I say, a bit of nervousness. Can we actually do this? Are we going to cope? Is it going to break down? But I think we both felt so positive about what we could offer and the connection and the relationship that we could build. It was pretty exciting, really.
I think it had a really positive start, didn't it? So it just felt, it naturally just kind of progressed from there, like, and the relationship with our son as well, it was just really positive straight away. So yeah, there wasn't any like difficulties in that sense to kind of overcome.
Excellent. I mean, so you're now 5 years into that experience of fostering. And so
yeah.
I'm sure there's been good days. I'm sure there's been less than good days. But when you reflect across that time, what are the sort of the things that stand out to you?
Just how far we've all come and how I think people often say, oh, you're doing such a nice thing. But really, we genuinely feel like we're the lucky ones. We feel like our family's been expanded, but in the most positive way. And how much we've gained through doing this process. And I think just looking back and how settled he is and how we're also settled. And yeah, we've come a long way. Mm. And yeah, it feels positive.
I'm looking at Adam, seeing if he's going to add anything.
He looks like he's thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my reflections on people who sort of retire from fostering is that often they very rarely cite children as one of the reasons, or people give up. They often talk about the system and professionals. And I'm not looking for you to say anything negative just for the sake of it or positive. But what are your reflections on the system itself? Because you're, in some ways, you're cocooned within within an agency that's kind of very, probably very care of focus from what you said. So what is it like looking out into that, into the hinterland of social care?
Definitely had some challenges with the bigger picture, and but that it just feels, because it's coming from a system that's overstretched and not enough support in place. So it's not at anyone personally, it is just literally the fights we've had to go through, which, yeah, even just like through education, through their right, you know, just anything, would often feel like you have to be their biggest advocate. If you're not doing it, then it's not going to go very far. You just have to really take that on. I think that's what we learned quite quickly, is we have to become everything for that, like for them to move forward, to get into a school, to get into any opportunity. You have to really push for it. And that's not to say that nobody else wants to do that for them or doesn't want them to go forward in things, but there's lots of people for that one person, but we've only got one person to do that for. So yeah, you have to do that. But I actually think that's really, you know, it's really rewarding as well. You're like, okay, cool, we've sorted this for them, and now look how far they could go with this. Or yeah, I think that's just part of the process. But yeah, we learned that quite quickly. Like, you have to advocate from the beginning.
Yeah, I think advocating has been the thing that has kept us focused on mm-hmm. the task, and positive. You can very easily get bogged down with the negatives of the social care system, and it's incredibly frustrating at many times, and it's underwhelming most of the time. But I think trying to maintain a positive opinion of it is also, and I think this is something that we apply generally in foster caring as well, is it's easy to develop negative opinions around situations such as the child that you're caring for, because they can be challenging, or the situation that you're in because you're a foster carer and you've got all this additional baggage and burdens, or the social workers because they seem like they're never doing anything, or the social care system because it feels broken. But there's so much incredible work that is actually happening, and the fact that children get this care, regardless of the, you know, you could question the quality of it or the, I don't know, the health of how the system works. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people working to try and make sure that children are safe. And we're just this tiny little speck in that, trying to do the best job that we can. But the system is allowing at least something to be done. And I think we try to maintain feeling grateful for that, because it also allows us to be foster carers. It allows us to have this incredible experience. But yeah, I think the advocating, which is essentially where you're drawing your battle lines, you know, we demand this for our child, and we expect this for our child, and we want you to do this now, and we need this now, and holding that position against the social care system helps us to engage with it, to kind of work through it, and it, you know, it's, you don't always get what you need or what you want, but we see ourselves as being the people that are trying to help this young person to get everything that they are entitled to, or everything that they should be getting, to help them grow up, you know, and become a positive human being in the world. And so it's really kind of up and down, back and forth, incredibly frustrating many times. But I think through the support that we get, and through the training that we've had, and through the therapeutic approach that our agency take, we're always able to in some way kind of reframe in a positive perspective and look at, okay, what can we do? How can we get this? What's actionable that's going to be a good thing or improve or help this young person? And I think I feel like we've become quite capable at that, and kind of almost enjoy it. But yeah, there's a lot, we do see a lot within fostering in particular, of, you know, kind of blaming the system for challenges or difficulties, or blaming the situation, and it just, it spins a negative perception. You know, we're hard done by because we're not getting this, or this isn't happening, and it's very easy to get caught up in that, and I've seen people get caught up in that. But I think on the flip side, just a slight reframing, you can see the beauty of what is actually being done, and you know, the work that does happen, and this, I think the success stories come out of that framework rather than the kind of critical negative framework.
Yeah. I was thinking recently this week or last week, the statistics around foster care recruitment and kind of retention came out. I was wondering your reflections on, you know, why are people leaving? Why are less people coming in? You know, you've probably touched on why people are leaving, but what, you know, what do you say? Because you're perhaps bucking the trend. You're happy fostering. You know, you've got potentially got a long career ahead of you. So yeah. What are your thoughts on the bigger picture?
I mean, to be honest, I wasn't aware of the figures about it, the numbers going down. I was hoping it was going the other way. But I know this is something we're speaking about recently, though, is perhaps the climate we're in now and how, you know, everything's more difficult financially. And I wonder if it is something to do with that. Obviously, you don't go into fostering for the money. But so maybe I'm just thinking maybe it's something to do with that. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully yeah. It's the other way.
Yeah. It's quite a bleak picture out there in terms of people's perceptions. Do you think there's a lot of myths or misconceptions about fostering, or even stereotypes?
See, Adam's thinking. He's got his
hair. I could see he's got that just slight look off to the distance, thoughtfulness about him.
Yeah. I don't know. Just some of your questions scare me because I can see where they can be led into talking to getting lost in a deep discussion.
Let's get lost.
And the complexities of it. I think you know, we're both millennials, and I think there's an interesting kind of psychology within millennials where we've perhaps been conditioned to believe and aspire towards something beyond our own capabilities. So we've kind of sold the bigger picture with no real reality to that, you know, become a millionaire by such and such and, you know, own a yacht and sail around the world. And we have all of these, you know, these incredible people to aspire towards, like Jeff Bezos and Steve Jobs, and, you know, and they're incredible stories, and I find those people inspiring in some ways, but it's like one in, you know, 7 billion, right? Those stories. And I think there's a nature to probably our generation. I think you get a polarized situation, and you know, like you say, there's a drop off in terms of people registering to become foster carers, but there's also an increase in the average number from our generation. And so I think it's this idea of what kind of life do you want to lead? Do you want to chase after the pot of gold, you know, and try and strike it lucky, or what is it called? Like hustle your way to being a millionaire, a billionaire, and live the stream, Instagram life? Or do you just want to live a wholesome, meaningful, fulfilling life? And I think our generation in particular is struggling to process that. And so you get a lot of people who, you know, for example, are deciding not to have children because to them, it feels like it's something in the way of chasing that dream. But then you also have people like us who are saying, well, we want to care for more children than just our own children. And we want to build a life around that and a sense of meaning and fulfillment around that. And it's not about the money. It's not about the job. It's not about having the amazing house. It's about having the special moments and being able to be together as a family. And I think that's what a lot of our conversations are about, Halima and I. I wouldn't necessarily say we're where we want to be or we're doing amazingly, but we have this idea that we want to create a life whereby we have the freedom to be together as much as we want, as much as possible, and we're not having to depend on jobs that take us away from each other or chasing opportunities or, you know, needs that take us away from each other. And fostering felt like something that would bring us together as a family. We can focus on ourselves being carers for these young children who need help, who need advocates, who need looking after, who need support. So it's kind of an inward movement, I guess, saying let's be us and let's do us on our own terms, and not worry about the flashy job and the flashy car and the flashy house, and let's see what we can offer with who we are and what we have, and focus on building that. And like I said, I think, you know, we're partway on that journey, I would say, and we've got a long way to go, but it feels like the journey that we want to take, and it feels like the meaningful life that we want to live. I think there's a polarizing nature to, like I said, our generation in particular, which is you either turn away from that aspect of family and children and, you know, kind of social care, and you chase that dream, or you completely reject the worldly dream, and you come inward and you focus on, you know, the social care of being a family and the relationships with your children and the time that you spend with your children. And it's a very difficult thing to balance.
Yeah.
But I think that's our key aspiration. And it is also, it is a tool for us to achieve that aspiration, where it feels like it. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I think that's a really thoughtful answer. And I guess being part of a Generation X, which I always thought had the best name, if I'll be honest with you. I think we felt lucky with the name. A totally different perspective on life and living. And I think it is interesting that as an age, as a sector, we need to get our heads around that. How to, well, it sounds terrible, to sell fostering to a different generation.
Yeah.
In terms of you guys, though, I'm looking at the time, we've used up lots of time, and I know you've got to be places, things to do. What does the future hold for yous two?
More of this, hopefully. More of continuing our fostering journey. And
bigger house, more children?
More children, maybe. Not our own. Like fostering at some point.
We see this as a career path.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's like we've begun that. Most people would start fostering, I don't know, 50, 60. We started, I was in my early 30s. Halima was in her late 20s. Yeah. And so we've had this incredible training early on in our life. We've been learning therapeutic parental care whilst also raising our own children. And you know, the experience we're gaining, the training we're receiving, the support we're receiving, I think it's positioning us to become really high quality foster carers throughout the rest of our life. And I think we really like that idea. We like the idea of being able to offer a place for young people to live and grow and become, you know, wholesome, fulfilled people in their experience of growing up. So we feel like we're at the very beginning of this path, and it's slightly daunting looking ahead, but also it's kind of exciting
I think we still feel like new carers, don't we, really?
Yeah.
I still don't feel like that experienced because we haven't experienced that much yet. But yeah, so it definitely is like a long-term plan, and, you know, for our children to grow up, like our youngest is only two, so she's not even really aware of anything.
Hmm.
You know, so I think, yeah, continuing and seeing what else happens along the way.
But you've given me lots to think about in terms of sort of the system response to you, because one way I think, well, you're not a finite resource that we could just infinite resource we can burn through. That actually, how do we protect a family like you and create an environment that means you can have a career, fostering career, as long or as short as you want, but it's not driven into the ground because we've just kind of sucked the life out of you, been used you up. So I think that is. Coming away, I've got lots to think about that. I have to go in, sit in a dark room. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate hearing about your story and your kind of your experience and your perspective on fostering. And thank you so much for being open and honest with me. And I wish you well and all the luck in your fostering.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we enjoyed it. Thank you.